All right, so this is DJ Question Mark's Liberation Radio Report. And I'm going to be doing this regularly, coming up with interviews and on-the-street audio recordings. Although it's going to be mostly reading tonight. So anyways, now with the headlines. The uprising sweeping North Africa have reached Syria and Jordan. The Associated Press reported on March 26th that government buildings were set ablaze in southern and western Syria, one day after government forces opened fire on protesters in six cities. In Jordan, clashes between protesters, police, and government supporters, 120 people injured, including 52 policemen. In Yemen, U.S.-supported dictator Ali Abdullah Saleh clings to power after government snipers killed over 40 protesters earlier this week. In Bahrain, hundreds of Saudi soldiers crossed the border to put down the uprising there. The Bahraini king has issued a state of emergency and drove protesters from Pearl Square, the focal point of the demonstrations, by force. The Bahraini government then tore down the 300-foot monument in the square. In Libya, U.S. and French and U.K. warplanes began bombing Libyan army positions under the pretext of humanitarian intervention. The Libyan government, under the command of Colonel Muammar Gaddafi, has launched a military assault on the uprising there. The following is a letter from an anarchist in Libya critical of Gaddafi's brutality and imperialist intervention. It was written before the U.S. and France and the U.K. started bombing. And this was posted to libcom.org and other websites. The signs of the defeat of the Libyan revolution. Statement against the U.N.-sanctioned airstrikes of Libya by a Libyan anarchist. In a few hours, U.N. Security Council will decide to start airstrikes against Libya. France has said that it is ready to start the bombardment from tonight. We condemn this international resolution if it is realized, and we totally reject any foreign intervention in Libya, whatever shape it may take, especially a French one. France, that sold Gaddafi weapons worth billions, weapons that he is using today to blow up Libyans, the same France that didn't stop such deals until 3 weeks back. We condemn this intervention that will transform Libya into a real hell, even more than now. That intervention will also steal the revolution from the Libyans, a revolution that has cost them thousands of dead women and men so far. An intervention that will also divide the Libyan resistance. And even if these operations do succeed and Gaddafi falls or dies, like Saddam Hussein, it will mean that we were liberated by Americans and French, and I can assure you that they will keep reminding us of that every minute. How can we stand this ladder? How can we explain all these casualties to the coming generations, all those dead bodies that will be everywhere? To be liberated from Gaddafi just to become slaves to those who armed him and empowered him during all those years of authoritarian violence and repression. After the first mistake, the militarization of the popular revolution, here we are committing our second mistake, the establishment of a new leadership of figures arising out of the remnants of the Libyan Jamahiriya regime. And our third mistake is coming inevitably, which will be to ask for help from our enemies. I also hope we will not reach the fourth one, that is occupation and the arrival of the Marines. Sarkozy and France are our enemies. They are also enemies of the whole third world. They don't hide their contempt for us. All that Sarkozy cares about is to be re-elected next year. The man who organized the meeting between Sarkozy and the representatives of the Interim National Council is none other than Bernard Henry Levy, a quack philosopher, and for those who don't know him, a French Zionist activist who concentrates all his efforts on supporting Israel and defending its interests. We saw him lately in Tahrir Square just to make sure that the revolting youth there would not chant against Israel. What can be said while waiting for the bombs? Because bombs will not differentiate between those who are pro-Gaddafi and who are against him. Colonialist bombs, as you know, have only one objective, to defend the interests of arms traders. They sold Gaddafi arms worth billions, and they will ask them to destroy them now. Then we will buy new arms through a new government. It is an old, well-known story. But there are people who cannot learn except through committing old mistakes made long before. I say this very clearly. This is a very dangerous strategic mistake, one that the Libyan people will pay for, maybe for many years to come, more than the years of the rule of Gaddafi and his family. I call today and now, just hours before the burning of Libya, and before it is made into another Baghdad, I call on all Libyans, all intellectuals, artists, university graduates, everyone who can write and those who cannot, every female and male citizen, to reject this military intervention by the US, France, and Britain, and the Arab regimes that they support. At the same time, I call on all the people to support us, the Egyptians, the Tunisians, French, even Chinese, all the peoples of the world. We welcome their support and sympathy. But as for governments, whatever government, we will not ask anything from them, but to leave us alone, to let us finish the problem of Gaddafi by ourselves. And that was by Saud Salem, a Libyan anarchist, on the 17th of March, 2011. And this next article is from Chile. 9 anarchists and compañeros are on hunger strike in Chile, day 25. Comrades, if fight, we could lose, but if we don't fight, we are lost. By any elation, Vancouver Media Co-op, March 19th, 2011. In Santiago and Valparaiso, Chile, police raided multiple homes and anarchist social centers on August 14th, 2010. These raids were part of a wave of repression which led to the arrest and prosecution of 14 people. That is what's known as the Caso Bombas, or the Bombs case. The 14 are called the Illicit Terrorist Organization, i.e. conspiracy, and with the transportation of placing of an explosive device in connection to anti-state and anti-capitalist attacks on institutions in the country over the last 3 years. 8 people were charged in Caso Bombas. They have been imprisoned since August under preventative detention. On February 21st, 2011, 7 of them began an indefinite hunger strike demanding their release, as well as the end to the anti-terrorist law. On February 23rd, the conditional release of co-defendants Compañeros Vinciano Aguilera and Omar Hermosilla was revoked. Upon re-entering prison, they too joined in the hunger strike. Today is day 25 of the indefinite hunger strike began by imprisoned anarchists in Chile. Anarchists in Santiago are organizing solidarity demonstrations which take place every Wednesday. At least 4 demos have already taken place in Santiago, growing in size each time. Police have fired tear gas to break up the demonstrations, made numerous arrests, and repeatedly targeted the radical dancing troupe, Tinku. In a recent statement, anarchist hunger striker Monica Caballero sent a message to all comrades acting in solidarity. Have no doubt, this is a political trial. Today, like before, anti-authoritarian ideas send chills down the spineless backs of those who love the law. So it is of utmost importance to propagate the ideas and encourage the different struggles that aim for the destruction of domination. The road is complex. The enemy mocks using the filthiest tricks possible, from preventing the drinking water to laughing during every checkup. But it does not matter, because for each one of their attacks, my skin becomes even harder. I send a strong embrace to my known comrades and those I don't know, to all the restless and unmanageable bodies and minds in every latitude. Make sure that the hunt never ends. Thanks to those of you who have filled the halls and streets with light. And that is from political prisoners from August 14th on hunger strike to the streets. Destroy every cage. And that was from Monica Caballero. And the strikers' demands are 1, immediate freedom. 2, an end to the judicial political farce known as the bomb case. 3, an end to the investigation and the immediate trial. 4, not to be processed under the anti-terrorist law and the abolition of this law, which is a vestige of Pinochet's dictatorship. On March 15th, 2011, 4 Mapuche political prisoners began a hunger strike as well. All 4 are facing serious sentences under anti-terror laws and have previously engaged in hunger strikes. Solidarity actions with the anarchists and social strikers were reported in Chile, Argentina, Bolivia, Greece, and Spain. And for more information, you can check out thisisourjob.wordpress.com for more information on that. Here's an article from 325, which is an anarchist, insurrectionary anarchist group in the UK. And this is about the eviction wave hits Amsterdam. Squatters choose attack instead of defense. This Tuesday, the 22nd of March, the city of Amsterdam witnessed a huge eviction wave. It was the first big series of evictions after the new anti-squat law in Holland. The formerly quite tolerant attitude in Holland towards squatting had been replaced by a zero-tolerance approach to anyone taking housing rights into their own hands. Instead of evicting squatted houses one by one, the Amsterdam police had a tradition of evicting in so-called eviction waves. An eviction wave generally consists of a high number of riot police, specialized teams for breaking open doors and barricades, police dogs, armored water cannon trucks, and sometimes a helicopter. This time, the usual circus was even joined by military police. Starting early in the morning, this police force crossed the city and evicted a number of pre-announced squats. Instead of focusing on defense of the squats to be evicted, this time a call-out was made for decentralized autonomous actions. The night before the eviction wave was a chaotic one for the police. Even though they were massively present in the streets during the whole night before the eviction wave, individuals attacked and vandalized several state and corporate targets. A police van was set on fire. Banks attacked and cash machines smashed. Furthermore, a car belonging to a big housing corporation was burned to the ground. Squatting and anti-authoritarian graffiti was left all over the city. 6 arrests were made during the night. 1 person was arrested when he refused to leave the squat and stayed inside. 10 houses were evicted after a full day of police activity. The cost of the eviction wave was estimated at €700,000. Squatting in Amsterdam will continue, and everyone knows it. Here is an article about the International Week of Action that has been called for the freedom for Jock Pal Freeman. And that is April 11th through 17. Jock Pal Freeman is a 20-year-old Australian who, on the 27th of December 2007, had the courage to stand up against 16 fascist hooligans on a night out in Sofia, Bulgaria. He witnessed the fascists chasing and attacking 2 young Roma boys. Jacques ran to the boys' aid. He did the best he could. He did the best to keep the fascists at bay by waving a knife at them, but they attacked him. Jacques was left with nowhere to run and had no choice but to defend himself. Andre Monoff, one of the racist gang, was stabbed and killed, and another, Anton Zariv, was injured. The Roma boys ran away. Jacques has since been tried and sentenced for murder and attempted murder. He has been sentenced to 20 years imprisonment and has been fined $375,000 Australian dollars. Jacques has spent much of the time he has already served in isolation due to a legal loophole used by the prison authorities. Andre Monoff's father is well known in Bulgaria, and at the funeral there was a mixture of judges, police, and politicians. Jacques' trial was not surprisingly a complete sham. Yet another example of corruption and secret handshakes in the judicial system. The prosecution's case was built on the witness statements made by other Nazis that were there that night, all claiming that Jacques randomly attacked the group and chased them with the intent of killing somebody. Key people and possible witnesses for Jacques' defense was never interviewed by police, and the closed-circuit TV footage of the scene miraculously went missing. Many of the statements made at the time were not the same as the statements submitted to the court by the prosecution. Jacques' statement has remained consistent from the night in question. You can read Jacques' official statement at www.freejock.com. You can also watch a documentary about his case that contains interviews with Jock. Jock appealed against his sentence in a few court hearings took place between October 2010 and January 2011. Despite police officers confirming his version of events, one of the fascists making totally incoherent statements in court trying to explain why he changed his original testimony, mounting evidence of judicial errors during the initial trial, and all other factors pointing to his innocence, his sentence of 20 years was upheld. He has one last chance of appealing against that decision. It is now more important than ever that we collectively put as much pressure on the Bulgarian authorities as possible to accept Jock's final appeal. From the 11th to 17th of April, there will be another international week of action for Jock. The more creative the actions, the better. Don't let Bulgarian state bury this courageous man alive in prison. Don't let them think they can get away with it. And a political prisoner news from the United States. Political prisoner Scott DeMuth has been moved. And this is info from the Davenport Grand Jury website. Scott DeMuth is a political prisoner currently serving a 6-month term, which will be followed by a year of supervised release. In September of 2010, he pleaded guilty to a single misdemeanor, conspiracy to commit animal enterprise terrorism in violation of the Animal Enterprise Protection Act for his involvement in a ferret release at a farm in Minnesota in 2006. While he's in prison, we encourage you to write Scott letters at Scott DeMuth, number 11246-030, care of Leavenworth Detention Center, 100 Highway Terrace, Leavenworth, Kansas, 66048. And also visit breakthechains.info and Denver Anarchist Black Cross website at denverabc.wordpress.com for more information on political prisoners and state repression. This is a local story. We don't talk to the police. We don't make the peace bond. This is March 23rd from the Puget Sound Anarchist website. So today in Olympia, here is a first-hand account of jogging and getting harassed by the police. So today in Olympia, I left my house for a run at about 1 o'clock p.m. I had gotten 2 blocks away from my house when I noticed a large white SUV turned out behind me. I didn't think anything of it at the time. However, a few blocks later, I was jogging on the left, and on the left side of the walk, there was a large white SUV approaching me, driving the wrong way on the road and very slowly. Throughout this whole conversation, I continued to be jogging, although I did at a slow pace. The window was rolled down and I heard, "Excuse me, sir, can I ask you a question?" Hearing this, I looked up and realized 2 white men in suits with shaved heads. The passenger was wearing a Bluetooth and was using a computer built into the vehicle. So after seeing this, it was pretty clear who they were. I told them that I was running and wanted to be left alone. They replied, stating, "Please, sir, it will only take a minute of your time." I responded in a similar way, stating that I was on my run and wanted to be left alone. Their response was my first, middle, last name, Mr. Sabat InfoShop, a student group I coordinate. "You don't know who you're fucking with, do you?" I responded, stating that I didn't know who they were and that I didn't want to talk to them. They responded, "Bullshit! You know who we are. We know who you are. You and all your little buddies better cut this shit out." They then told me that I should get into the car. I said no. They said it again, telling me that I really should get in the car. I told them to fuck off. They then asked me if I had ever seen the inside of a prison cell, because that's where me and all my buddies are going. And once again said, "You better realize who you're fucking with." At this point, I stopped responding. He stated very angrily that I need to get my ass in the fucking car right now and commanded me to stop. I asked him if I was being detained or arrested. There was no response. I continued to jog and he started insistently shit-talking, saying how me and all my buddies are going to prison, how we're never going to win, how we need to realize who we're fucking with, etc. At this point, I kind of tuned it out because it all blurred together and the convo had been going on for about 2 blocks. The car then slowed down, which I assumed meant that they were going to leave. They did. The car, still driving on the wrong side of the road, slowed down and made a quick left. I ducked back to try to grab the license plate, but they sped away and then turned abruptly. I believe it was a Washington plate, but I can't say for sure whether or not it was a government plate. It could have been. I remember it starting with a 0, and then it contained a 3 or a 7 and a 9. I realize it isn't helpful, but that's what I remember. So yeah, it doesn't take a genius to figure out this was obviously related to the acts of sabotage at the West Side police station. They were obviously prying for info, trying to get me into their car and shit. There was an insistence last week where people who were almost definitely officers or agents were seen photographing another anarchist-oriented house. This was witnessed by those that lived there. So nothing we don't already know, they are around, they are pissed, and they want to scare us. Just thought I'd share my story. Word, an anarchist from the 360. And another story from Olympia. This is from March 25th, 2011, from the Olympia Independent Media Center. Anarchist newspaper box stolen and trashed by the city of Olympia. The Anarchy newspaper box disappeared from downtown Olympia last week. It sat at the corner of 4th Ave and Franklin Street for almost 2 years, tirelessly distributing radical literature for free. A thorough investigation into the bureaucracy of the city of Olympia revealed that the city did remove the newspaper box and put it in the trash. City of Olympia code enforcer Ruth Schneider said that the newspaper box was not used and often filled with trash. No contact information was posted on the box, and a car supposedly damaged the box, prompting its quick removal. The city removed and confiscated the same newspaper box a few years back. That time, the city claimed that the newspaper box looked like a stolen newspaper box. The IWW's industrial worker newspaper box was also removed at the same time. Members of the Olympia IWW reclaimed both newspaper boxes from the city. The city claims to have already disposed of the Anarchy newspaper box. It is yet to be seen whether people who used the Anarchy newspaper box will make another one. And here's an article from Seattle, March 23rd, from the Puget Sound Anarchist website. And this is Seattle. This is a fundraiser for anti-police arrestee benefit dinner March 30th. So March 30th, there's going to be an anti-police arrestee benefit dinner at the Autonoma Social Space, 624th Avenue South, Seattle. And it's $5, starts at 7 p.m. Wednesday, March 30th. And here is the text from the poster. On August 31st, 2010, John T. Williams was shot and killed by Seattle police officer Ian Burke. The murder prompted a series of demonstrations against the murder of J.T. Williams and police violence in general. Anarchists also disrupted a police accountability conference, engaged in street actions, and spread information on the role of police in society and the media's role in neutralizing any and all anti-police sentiment. 16 people have been arrested during the demonstrations and jail support over the last month and a half, all on misdemeanor charges ranging from malicious mischief, obstruction of an officer, criminal trespassing, and rioting. Supporting arrestees financially and emotionally is a small but vital part in the practice of solidarity. True solidarity is the recognition of your own struggle and the struggle of those suffering repression, and then carried out through the continuity of that struggle. The maintenance of active revolt. The momentum that was born in the streets lives on even in the face of repression. And here is a quote from Revolutionary Solidarity. Solidarity lies in action. Action that sinks its roots in one's own project that is carried on coherently and proudly too, especially in times when it might be dangerous even to express one's ideas publicly. A project which is not specifically linked to the repression that has struck our comrades, but which continues to evolve and make social tension grow to the point of making it explode so strongly that the prison walls fall down by themselves. And lastly, here's an article from Milwaukee Indie Media, and it is about a prison solidarity demo there. The night of March 15th, a group of roughly 40 students, workers, the unemployed, and other uncontrollables marched to the Milwaukee County Jail carrying banners and black flags. The banners at the front of the march read, "Burn all prisons and no control." Upon arriving at the front doors of the jail, demonstrators chanted, "Free them all," and launched dozens of fireworks through the air in an effort to communicate with those locked inside. The demonstration was called by the participants in the occupation of the theater building at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee as part of an ongoing struggle against the budget repair bill. The bill, proposed by the hated governor of Wisconsin, contains a provision that will institute a truth in sentencing policy. This measure removes the possibility for those locked away in Wisconsin jails and prisons to qualify for early release for good behavior or good time. For inmates, this means a dramatic increase in the time spent in jail, more time in captivity, kept away from their families and loved ones, kept in abject misery and isolation. The truth in sentencing provisions of the bill highlight specifically how the economic attacks on working and unemployed people throughout the state go hand in hand with the criminalization and imprisonment of the working class. The economic system that exploits our labor, deprives our benefits, and throws us onto the street is the very same system that keeps us in cages and behind barbed wire. In the past weeks of resistance to Walker's austerity measures, the politicians and police unions have been remarkably silent about this provision. They built a mythology that we're all in this together or that they're on our side. It is more convenient for them to simply ignore the ways that the bill they purportedly oppose dramatically expands the prison system they faithfully defend. It is no coincidence that the bill both extends prison sentences while also protecting the police union from the elimination of collective bargaining rights. The role of politicians and the police is to maintain the dreadful economy and the prison system necessary to it. It should come as no surprise to us that those who fail to criticize the system are the same who encourage us to continue working and scold those who step out of lines they defined. It's time for new lines to be drawn. On the one side, the governor, politicians, police, bureaucrats, professional activists. On the other, prisoners, workers, students, the unemployed, the enraged. If the spontaneous struggle against this bill were to generalize and become a movement against this economic system and its prisons, it would mean that those affected by the bill would need to extend their actions and gestures of solidarity through all the walls that separate them. December's historic strike by prisoners in Georgia shows us what such action could look like. For us, this means that the strikes, occupations, and sabotage, the generalized disruption of the economy, needs to spread through the walls of the prison to generalize and to intensify. In this, we need to build complicit relationships and revolt inside and outside those walls towards an unlimited strike for a world without prison. And that concludes my show for this today. Thanks for listening, and I'm going to do this hopefully every Monday for a while here. So continue to listening, and this was broadcast live on Free Radio Olympia on March 28th, 2011. And thanks for listening.